course. She wondered what had happened between Melissa and Ren after last night, praying she wouldn't have to face them.
We've been waiting for you.
Spencer jumped. At the kitchen table were her parents and Melissa. Her mother's face was pale and drained, and her dad's cheeks were beet red. Melissa's eyes were red-rimmed and puffy. Even the two dogs didn't jump up to greet her as they normally did. Spencer swallowed hard. So much for praying.
Sit down, please, her father said quietly.
Spencer scraped back a wooden chair and sat next to her mother. The room was so still and silent, she could hear his stomach, nervously on spin cycle.
I don't even know what to say, her mother croaked. How could you?
Spencer's stomach dropped. She opened her mouth, but her mother held up her hand.
You have no right to talk right now.
Spencer clamped her mouth shut and lowered her eyes.
Honestly, her father said, I am so mortified you're my daughter right now. I thought we raised you better.
Spencer picked at a rough cuticle on her thumb and tried to stop her chin from wobbling.
What were you thinking? Her mother asked. That was her boyfriend. They were planning to move in together. Do you realize what you've done?
Spencer started.
I mean,
her mother interrupted, then wrung her hands and looked down.
You're under 18, which means we're legally responsible for you,
her father said.
But if it were up to me, I'd lock you out of this house right now.
I wish I never had to see you again, Melissa spat. Spencer felt faint. She half expected them to set down their coffee cups and tell her they were just kidding, that everything was all right. But they couldn't even look at her. Her dad's words stung in her ears. I am so mortified you're my daughter. No one had ever said anything like that to her before.
One thing's for certain. Melissa will be moving into the barn, her mother continued. I want all of your stuff out and back into your old bedroom.
And once her townhouse is ready, I'm turning the barn into a pottery studio. Spencer balled up her fists under the table, willing herself not to cry. She didn't care about the barn, not really. It was what came with the barn that mattered. It was that her dad was going to build shelves for her. Her mom was going to help her pick out new curtains. They'd said she could get a kitten, and they'd all spent a few minutes thinking up funny names for it. They were excited for her. They cared. She reached out for her mother's arm. I'm sorry. Her mother slid her body away.
Spencer, don't.
Spencer couldn't manage to swallow her sob. Tears started running down her cheeks.
It's not me you need to apologize to anyway, her mother said in a low voice.
Spencer looked at Melissa, sniveling across the table. She wiped her nose. As much as she hated Melissa, she'd never seen her sister this miserable, not since Ian broke up with her back in high school. It was wrong to flirt with Ren, but Spencer hadn't thought it would go as far as it did. She tried to put herself in Melissa's place. If she'd met Ren first, and Melissa had kissed him, she'd be shattered too. Her heart softened.
I'm sorry,
she whispered. Melissa shuddered.
Rot in hell, she spat.
Spencer bit the inside of her mouth so hard she tasted blood.
Just get your things out of the barn, her mother sighed. Then get out of our sight.
Spencer's eyes widened. But, she squeaked. Her father gave her a withering look.
It's just so despicable,
her mother murmured. You're such a bitch. Melissa threw in. Spencer nodded. Perhaps if she agreed with them, they would stop. She wanted to shrivel up into a tiny ball and evaporate. Instead, she mumbled, I'll go do it now.
Good.
Her father took another sip of coffee and left the table. Melissa made a small squeak and pushed back her chair. She sobbed the whole way up the stairs and slammed her bedroom door.
Ren left last night, Mr. Hastings said as he paused in the doorway. We won't be hearing from him, ever again. And if you know what's best for you, you won't talk about him ever again. Of course, Spencer mumbled and set her head down on the cool oak table. Good. Spencer kept her head firmly on the table, breathing yoga fire breaths and waiting for someone to come back and tell her that everything would be okay. Nobody did. Outside, she heard an ambulance siren screaming in the distance. It sounded like it was coming toward the house. Spencer sat up. Oh, God. What if Melissa had hurt herself? She wouldn't, would she? The sirens howled, coming closer. Spencer shoved back her chair. Holy shit. What had she done? Melissa? She yelled, running to the stairs. You're a whore, came a voice. You're a fucking whore. Spencer slumped back against the railing. Well then, it seemed Melissa was just fine after all. 30. The circus is back in town. Emily biked furiously away from Aria's house, narrowly missing a jogger on the side of the road. Watch it, he yelled. As she passed a neighbor walking two huge Great Danes, Emily made a decision. She had to go to Maya's. It was the only answer. Maybe Maya had meant it in a nice way, like she was just returning the note after Emily told her about Allison last night. Maybe Maya wanted to mention the letter last night, but for whatever reason, she didn't. Maybe the A was really an M? Besides, she and Maya had tons of other stuff to talk about, besides the note. Try everything that happened at the party. Emily closed her eyes, remembering. She could practically smell Maya's banana gum and feel the soft contours of her mouth. Opening her eyes, she swerved away from the curb. Okay, they definitely needed to work that out. But what did Emily want to say? I loved it? No. Of course she wouldn't say that. She would say, we should just be friends. She was going back to Ben, after all. If he'd have her. She wanted to rewind time, to go back to being the Emily who was happy with her life, who her parents were happy with. The Emily who only worried about her breaststroke reach and her algebra homework. Emily pedaled past Meyer Park, where she and Allie used to swing for hours. They tried to pump together in unison, and when they were completely even, Allie always called out, "We're married!" Then they'd squeal and jump off at the same time. But what if Maya hadn't put that note on her bike? When Emily asked Aria if Allie had told her Emily's secret, Aria had replied, "What, recently?" Why would Aria say that? Unless Aria knew something. Unless Allie was back. Was that possible? Emily skidded through the gravel. No. That was crazy. Her mother still exchanged holiday cards with Mrs. De Laurentiis. She would have heard if Allie had returned. Back when Allie vanished, it was on the news 24/7. These days, her parents usually had on CNN while they ate breakfast. It would surely be a top story again. Still, it was thrilling to consider. Every night for almost a year after Allie's disappearance, Emily had asked her magic eight ball if Allison would come back. Although it sometimes said, wait and see, it never, ever said, no. She made bets with herself, too. If two kids get on the school bus today wearing red shirts, she would whisper to herself, Allie is okay. If they're serving pizza at lunch, Allie's not dead. If coach makes us practice starts and turns, Allie will come back. 9 times out of 10, according to Emily's little superstitions, Allie was on her way back to them. Maybe she'd been right all along. She pumped uphill and around a sharp turn, narrowly avoiding a stone Revolutionary War battle memorial sign. If Allie was back, what would that mean for Emily's friendship with Maya? She sort of doubted she could have two best friends. Two best friends she felt so similarly about. She wondered what Allie would even think of Maya. What if they hated each other? I loved it. We should just be friends. She swept past the beautiful farmhouses, crumbling stone inns, and gardeners' pickups parked on the road's shoulder. She used to bike this exact route to Allie's house. The last time, in fact, had been before the kiss. Emily hadn't planned to kiss Allie before she came. Something had come over her in the heat of the moment. She would never forget how soft Allie's lips were, or the stunned look on Allie's face when she pulled back. "What did you do that for?" she'd asked. Suddenly, a siren wailed behind her. Emily barely had time to move to the edge of the road again before a rosewood ambulance screamed past. A gust of wind kicked up, blowing dust into her face. She wiped her eyes and stared as the ambulance got to the top of the hill and paused at Allison Street. Now it was turning onto Allison Street. Fear seized Emily. Allie's street was Maya's street. She gripped the rubber handles of her bike. With all the craziness, she'd forgotten the secret Maya had told her last night. The cutting, the hospital, that huge, jagged scar. "Sometimes I just feel like I need to," Maya had said. "Oh my God," Emily whispered. She pedaled furiously and skidded around the corner. "If the ambulance sirens stop by the time I get around the corner," she thought, "Maya will be okay." But then the ambulance pulled to a stop in front of Maya's house. The sirens were still roaring. Police cars were everywhere. "No," Emily whispered. White-coated medics got out of the vehicle and ran for the house. A ton of people littered Maya's yard, some with cameras. Emily threw her bike at the curb and ran crookedly toward the house. "Emily!" Maya burst through the crowd. Emily gasped, then ran into Maya's arms, tears messily running down her face. "You're okay," Emily sobbed. "I was afraid." "I'm fine," Maya said. But there was something in her voice that was clearly not fine. Emily stood back. Maya's eyes were red and watery. Her mouth was drawn down nervously. "What is it?" Emily asked. "What's going on?" Maya swallowed. "They found your friend." "What?" Emily stared at her, then at the scene on Maya's lawn. It was all so eerily familiar. The ambulance, the cop cars, the crowds of people, the long-lensed cameras. A news helicopter hovered overhead. This was exactly the same scene as 3 years ago, when Allie went missing. Emily stepped back out of Maya's arms, grinning in disbelief. She had been right. Allison was back at her house, like nothing had ever happened. "I knew it," she whispered. Maya took Emily's hand. "They were digging for our tennis court. My mom was there. She saw her. I heard her scream from my bedroom." Emily dropped her hand. "Wait. What?" "I tried to call you," Maya added. Emily wrinkled her brow and stared back at Maya. Then she looked at the 20-strong team of cops. At Mrs. St. Germain sobbing by the tire swing. At the police line do not cross tape loops around the backyard. And then at the van parked in the driveway. It said, "Rosewood PD Morgue." She had to read it 6 times for it to make sense. Her heart sped up, and suddenly she couldn't breathe. "I don't understand," Emily sputtered, taking another step back. "Who did they find?" Maya looked at her sympathetically, her eyes shiny with tears. "Your friend Allison," she whispered. "They just found her body." 31. Hell is other people. Byron Montgomery took a big sip of coffee and shakily lit his pipe. "They found her when they were excavating the concrete slab in the De Laurentiis' old backyard to put in a tennis court." "She was under the concrete," Ella jumped in. "They knew it was her from the ring she was wearing, but they're doing DNA tests to make sure." It felt like a fist was pummeling Arya's stomach. She remembered Allie's white gold initialed ring. Allie's parents had gotten it for her at Tiffany's when she was 10, after she got her tonsils out. Allie liked to wear it on her pinky.
Why did they have to do DNA tests? Mike asked. Was she all decomposed?
Michelangelo,
Byron frowned.
That's not a very sensitive thing to say in front of your sister.
Mike shrugged and jammed a piece of sour green apple bubble tape into his mouth. Aria sat opposite him, tears quietly running down her cheeks, absent-mindedly unraveling the edge of a rattan placemat. It was 2 p.m., and they were sitting around the kitchen table.
I can handle it.
Aria's throat constricted.
Was she decomposed?
Her parents looked at each other.
Well, yes, her father said, scratching his chest through a little hole in his shirt. Bodies break down pretty fast.
Sick,
Mike whispered. Aria shut her eyes. Allison was dead. Her body was rotted. Someone had probably killed her.
Sweetheart? Ella asked quietly, cupping her hand over Aria's.
Honey, are you all right?
I don't know,
Aria murmured, trying not to start bawling all over again.
Would you like a Xanax?
Byron asked. Aria shook her head.
I'll take a Xanax, Mike said quickly.
Aria nervously picked at the side of her thumb. Her body felt hot and then cold. She didn't know what to do or think. The only person who she thought might make her feel better was Ezra. She thought she could explain all of her feelings to him. At the very least, he would let her curl up on his denim futon and cry. Scraping back her chair, she started for her room. Byron and Ella exchanged glances and followed her to the spiral staircase.
Sweetie, Ella asked, what can we do?
But Aria ignored them and pushed through her bedroom door. Her room was a disaster. Aria hadn't cleaned since she'd moved back from Iceland, and she wasn't the neatest girl in the world to start with. Her clothes were all over the floor in unorganized piles. On her bed were CDs, sequins she was using to make a beaded hat, poster paints, playing cards, pictunia, line drawings of Ezra's profile, several skeins of yarn. The carpet had a big, red candle wax stain on it. She searched in the covers of her bed and on the surface of her desk for her trio. She needed it to call Ezra, but it wasn't there. She checked the green bag she'd taken to the party last night, but her phone wasn't in that either. Then she remembered. After she received that text, she dropped the phone like it was poisonous. She must have left it behind. She stormed down the stairs. Her parents were still on the landing.
I'm taking the car, she mumbled, grabbing the keys off the ring by the foyer table.
Okay,
her father said.
Take your time,
her mother added. Someone had propped the front door to Ezra's house open with a large metal sculpture of a terrier. Aria stepped around it and walked inside the hallway. She knocked on Ezra's door. She had the same feeling she did when she had to pee really badly. It might be torture, but you knew that very soon you were going to feel a whole hell of a lot better. Ezra flung open the door. As soon as he saw her, he tried to shut it again.
Wait, Aria squeaked, her voice still filled with tears.
Ezra retreated into his kitchen, his back to her. She followed him in. Ezra whirled around to face her. He was unshaven and looked exhausted.
What are you doing here?
Aria chewed on her lip.
I'm here to see you. I got some news.
Her trio sat on his sideboard. She picked it up.
Thanks, you found it.
Ezra glared at the trio.
Okay, you got it. Can you leave now?
What's going on?
She walked toward him. I got this news. I had to see-
Yeah? I got some news too,
he interrupted. Ezra moved away from her.
Seriously, Aria? I can't even look at you.
Tears sprang to her eyes.
What?
Aria stared at him, confused.
Ezra lowered his eyes. I found what you said about me on your cell phone.
Arya wrinkled her eyebrows. My cell phone?
Ezra raised his head. His eyes flashed with anger.
Do you think I'm stupid? Was this all just a game? A dare?
What are you...
Ezra sighed angrily.
Well, you know what? You got me, okay? I'm the brunt of your big joke.
You happy?
Now get out.
I don't understand, Arya said loudly. Ezra slapped his palm against the wall. The force of it made Arya jump.
Don't play dumb. I'm not some boy, Arya.
Arya's whole body started to tremble. I swear to God, I don't know what you're talking about. Can you explain, please? I'm kind of falling apart here.
Ezra took his hand off the wall and started to pace around the tiny room.
Fine. After you left, I tried to sleep. There was this beeping. You know what it was?
He pointed to the trio.
Your cell phone thing. The only way to shut it up was to open your text messages.
Arya wiped her eyes.
Ezra crossed his arms over his chest.
Shall I quote them for you?
Then Arya realized. The text messages.
Wait, no, you don't understand.
Ezra trembled.
Student-teacher conference? Extra credit? This sound familiar?
No, Ezra, Arya stammered. You don't understand. The world was spinning.
Arya gripped the edge of Ezra's kitchen table.
I'm waiting, Ezra said.
This friend of mine was killed, she began. They just found her body.
Arya opened her mouth to say more, but couldn't find the words. Ezra stood at the farthest point in the room from her, behind the bathtub.
It's all so silly, Arya said. Can you please come over here? Can you at least hug me?
Ezra crossed his arms over his chest and looked down. He stood that way for what felt like a long time.
I really liked you, he finally said, his voice thick.
Arya choked back a sob. I really like you, too.
She walked over to him. But Ezra stepped away.
No, you have to get out of here.
But...
Ezra clapped his hand over her mouth.
Please,
he said a little desperately.
Please leave.
Arya widened her eyes and her heart started to pound. Alarms went off in her head. This felt wrong. On impulse, she bit down into Ezra's hand.
What the fuck?
He shrieked, pulling away. Arya stood back, dazed. Blood dripped out of Ezra's hand onto the floor.
You're insane, Ezra cried.
Arya breathed heavily. She couldn't speak even if she wanted to. So she turned and ran for the door. As her hand turned the doorknob, something screamed past her, bounced off the wall, and landed next to her foot. It was a copy of Being and Nothingness by Jean-Paul Sartre. Arya turned back to Ezra, her mouth open in shock.
Get out, Ezra boomed.
Arya slammed the door behind her. She tore down across the lawn as fast as her legs would carry her. 32. A Fallen Star. The next day, Spencer stood at her old bedroom window, smoking a Marlboro and looking across her lawn into Allison's old bedroom. It was dark and empty. Then, her eyes moved to the De Laurentiis' yard. The flashing lights hadn't stopped since they found her. The police had put up Do Not Cross tape all around the concrete area of Allison's old backyard, even though they had already removed her body from the ground. They'd put huge tents around the area while doing that, too, so Spencer hadn't seen anything. Not that she'd have wanted to. It was beyond awful to think that Allie's body had been next door to her, rotting in the ground for 3 years. Spencer remembered the construction before Allie disappeared. They dug the hole right around the night she went missing. She knew, too, that they'd filled it after Allie disappeared, but wasn't sure when. Someone had just dumped her there. She stubbed out her Marlboro in the brick siding of her house and turned back to Lucky Magazine. She'd hardly exchanged a word with her family since yesterday's confrontation, and she'd been trying to calm herself down by going methodically through it and marking everything she wanted to buy with the magazine's little yes stickers. As she looked at a page on tweed blazers, though, her eyes glazed over. She couldn't even talk to her parents about this. Yesterday, after they confronted her at breakfast, Spencer had wandered outside to see what the sirens were all about. Ambulances still made her nervous, from both the Jenna thing and Allie's disappearance. As she walked across her lawn to the De Laurentiis house, she sensed something and turned back. Her parents had come out to see what was going on, too. When they saw her turn, they quickly looked away. The police told her to stand back, that this area was off limits. Then Spencer saw the morgue van. One of the policeman's walkie-talkies crackled, "Allison." Her body had grown very cold. The world spun. Spencer slumped down on the grass. Someone spoke to her, but she couldn't understand him. "You're in shock," she finally heard. "Just try to calm down." Spencer's field of vision was so narrow, she wasn't sure who it was, only that it wasn't her mom or dad. The guy came back with a blanket and told her to sit there for a while and keep warm. Once Spencer felt well enough to get up, whoever had helped her was gone. Her parents had left too. They hadn't even bothered to see if she was okay. She'd spent the rest of Saturday and most of Sunday in her room, only going out into the hall to the bathroom when she knew no one else was around. She hoped someone would come up and check on her, but when she heard a small, tentative knock on her door earlier this afternoon, Spencer didn't answer. She wasn't sure why. She listened to whoever it was sigh and pad back down the hall. And then, only a half hour ago, Spencer had watched her dad's Jaguar back out of the driveway and turn toward the main road. Her mom was in the passenger seat. Melissa was in the back. She had no idea where they were going. She slumped down in her computer chair and pulled up that first email from A, the one talking about coveting things she couldn't have. After reading it a few times, she clicked reply. Slowly, she typed, "Are you Allison?" She hesitated before hitting send. Were all the police lights making her trippy? Dead girls didn't have Hotmail accounts, nor did they have instant messenger screen names. Spencer had to get a grip. Someone was pretending to be Allie. But who? She stared up at the Mondrian mobile she'd bought last year at the Philadelphia Art Museum. Then she heard a plink sound. There it was again. Plink. It sounded really close, actually. Like at her window. Spencer sat up just as a pebble hit her window again. Someone was throwing rocks. Eh? As another rock hit, she went to the window and gasped. On the lawn was Wren. The blue and red lights from the police cars kept making streaky shadows across his cheeks. When he saw her, he broke into a huge smile. Immediately, she bolted downstairs, not caring how horrible her hair looked, or that she was wearing marinara-stained Kate Spade pajama pants. Wren ran for her as she came out the door. He threw his arms around her and kissed her scruffy head. "You're not supposed to be here," she murmured. "I know." He stood back. "But I noticed your parents' car was gone, so..." She pushed her hand through his soft hair. Wren looked exhausted. What if he had to sleep in his little Toyota last night? "How did you know I'd be back in my old room?" He shrugged. "A hunch. I also thought I saw your face at the window. I wanted to come earlier, but there was all that." He gestured to the police cars and random news vans next door. "You okay?" "Yeah," Spencer answered. She tilted her head up to Wren's mouth and bit her chapped lip to keep from crying. "Are you okay?" "Me? Sure. Do you have somewhere to live?" "I can stay on a friend's couch until I find something.
Not a big deal. If only Spencer could stay on a friend's couch, too. Then something occurred to her. Are you and Melissa over? Ren cupped her face in his hand and sighed. Of course, he said softly. It was kind of obvious. With Melissa, it wasn't like... He trailed off, but Spencer thought she knew what he was going to say. It wasn't like being with you. She smiled shakily and laid her head against his chest. His heart thumped in her ear. She looked over at the De Laurentiis house. Someone had started a little shrine to Allison on the curb, complete with pictures and Virgin Mary candles. In the center were little alphabet magnet letters that spelled Allie. Spencer herself had propped up a smiling picture of Allison in a tight blue Von Dutch t-shirt and spanking new sevens. She remembered when she'd taken that picture. They were in sixth grade, and it was the night of the Rosewood winter formal. The five of them had spied on Melissa as Ian picked her up. Spencer had gotten hiccups from laughing when Melissa, trying to make a grand entrance, tripped down the Hastings' front walk on the way to the tacky rented Hummer limo. It was probably their last really fun, carefree memory. The Jenna thing happened not too long after. Spencer glanced at Toby and Jenna's house. No one was home, as usual, but it still made her shiver. As she blotted her eyes with the back of her pale, thin hand, one of the news vans drove by slowly, and a guy in a red Phillies cap stared at her. She ducked. Now would not be the time to capture some emotional girl breaks down at the tragedy footage. You'd better go. She sniffed and turned back to Ren. It's so crazy here, and I don't know when my parents will be back. All right. He tilted her head up. But can we see each other again? Spencer swallowed and tried to smile. As she did, Ren bent down and kissed her, wrapping one hand around the back of her neck and the other around the very spot in her lower back that, just Friday, hurt like hell. Spencer broke away from him. I don't even have your number. Don't worry, Ren whispered. I'll call you. Spencer stood out on the edge of her vast yard for a moment, watching Ren walk to his car. As he drove away, her eyes stung with tears again. If only she had someone to talk to, someone who wasn't banned from her house. She glanced back at the alley shrine and wondered how her old friends were dealing with this. As Ren pulled to the end of her street of her vast yard for a moment, watching Ren walk to his car. As he drove away, her eyes stung with tears again. If only she had someone to talk to, someone who wasn't banned from her house. She glanced back at the alley shrine and wondered how her old friends were dealing with this. As Ren pulled to the end of her street, Spencer noticed another car's headlights turn in. She froze. Was that her parents? Had they seen Ren? The headlights inched closer. Suddenly, Spencer realized who it was. The sky was a dark purple, but she could just make out Andrew Campbell's longish hair. She gasped, ducking behind her mother's rose bushes. Andrew slowly pulled his mini up to her mailbox, opened it, slid something in, and neatly closed it again. He drove away. She waited until he was gone before sprinting out to the curb and wrenching open the mailbox. Andrew had left her a folded-up piece of notepaper. Hey, Spencer. I didn't know if you were taking any calls. I'm really sorry about Allison. I hope my blanket helped you yesterday. Andrew. Spencer turned up her driveway, reading and rereading the note. She stared at the slanty boy handwriting. Blanket? What blanket? Then she realized. It was Andrew who helped her? She crumpled up the note in her hands and started sobbing all over again. 33. Rosewood's Finest. Police have reopened the De Laurentiis case and are in the process of questioning witnesses, a newscaster on the 11 o'clock news reported. The De Laurentiis family, now living in Maryland, will have to face something they've tried to put behind them. Except now,
There is closure.
Newscasters were such drama queens, Hannah thought angrily as she shoved another handful of Cheez-Its in her mouth. Only the news could find a way to make a horrible story worse. The camera stayed focused on the alley shrine, as they called it. The candles, beanie babies, wilted flowers people no doubt just picked out of neighbors' gardens, marshmallow peeps, Allie's favorite candy, and of course, photos. The camera cut to Allison's mother, whom Hannah hadn't seen in a while. Besides her teary face, Mrs. De Laurentiis looked pretty, with a shaggy haircut and dangly chandelier earrings.
"We've decided to have a service for Allison in Rosewood, which was the only home Allie knew," Mrs. De Laurentiis said in a controlled voice. "We want to thank all of those who helped search for our daughter 3 years ago for their enduring support."
The newscaster came back on the screen.
"A memorial will be held tomorrow at the Rosewood Abbey and will be open to the public."
Hannah clicked off the TV. It was Sunday night. She sat on her living room couch, dressed in her rattiest CNC t-shirt and a pair of Calvin Klein boxer briefs she'd pilfered out of Sean's top drawer. Her long brown hair was messy and straw-like around her face, and she was pretty sure she had a pimple on her forehead. A huge bowl of Cheez-Its rested in her lap, an empty Klondike wrapper was crumpled up on the coffee table, and a bottle of Pinot Noir was wedged snugly at her side. She'd been trying all night not to eat like this, but, well, her willpower just wasn't very strong today. She clicked the TV back on, wishing she had someone to talk to. About the police, about A, and mostly about Allison. Sean was out, for obvious reasons. Her mom, who was on a date right now, was her usual useless self. After the hubbub of activity at the police station yesterday, Wilden told Hannah and her mother to go home. They'd deal with her later, since the police had more important things to attend to at the moment. Neither Hannah nor her mom knew what was happening at the station, only that it involved a murder. On the drive home, instead of Ms. Marin reprimanding Hannah for, stealing a car and driving pissed drunk, she told Hannah that she was taking care of it. Hannah didn't have a clue what that meant. Last year, a cop had spoken at a Rosewood Day assembly about how Pennsylvania had a zero-tolerance rule for drunk drivers under 21. At the time, Hannah had paid attention only because she thought the cop was sort of hot, but now his words haunted her. Hannah couldn't rely on Mona either. She was still at that golf tournament in Florida. They'd spoken briefly on the phone, and Mona had admitted the police had called her about Sean's car, but she'd played dumb, saying she'd been at the party the whole time, and Hannah had been too. And, the lucky bitch, they'd gotten the back of her head on the Wawa surveillance tape, but not her face, since she'd been wearing that disgusting delivery hat. That was yesterday, though, after Hannah got back from the police station. She and Mona hadn't talked today, and they hadn't discussed Allison yet. And then, there was A. Or if A was Allison, would A be gone now? But the police said Allison had been dead for years. As Hannah scanned the guide feature on TV for what else was on, her eyelids swollen with tears, she considered calling her father. This story might be on the Annapolis area news, too. Or maybe he'd call her? She picked up the silent phone to make sure it was still working. She sighed. The problem with being Mona's best friend was that they had no other friends. Watching all this alley footage made her think of her old group of friends. They'd had their rocky, horrible moments together, but they used to have a lot of fun, too. In a parallel universe, they'd all be together now, remembering Allie and laughing even though they were crying, too. But in this dimension, they'd grown too far apart. They'd split up for valid reasons, of course. Things had started to go rotten way before Allie went missing. In the beginning, when they were doing that charity drive stuff, it was wonderful. But then, after the Jenna thing happened, things got tense. They were all so afraid that what happened to Jenna could be linked to them.
Hannah remembered being jumpy even when she was on the bus and a cop car would pass by them, going in the other direction. Then, that next winter and spring, whole topics were suddenly off limits. Someone was always saying, "Shh," and then they all fell into an uncomfortable silence. The 11 o'clock newscaster signed off, and The Simpsons came on. Hannah picked up her BlackBerry. She still knew Spencer's number by heart, and it probably wouldn't be too late to call. As she dialed the second digit, she cocked her ear, her Tiffany earrings jangling. There was a scratching noise at the door. Dot, who had been lying by her feet, picked up his head and growled. Hannah took the Cheez-It bowl off her lap and stood. Was it A? Knees shaking, Hannah crept into the hall. There were long, dark shadows at the back door, and the scratching noise had grown louder. "Oh my God," Hannah whispered, her chin trembling. Someone was trying to get in. Hannah looked around. There was a round jade paperweight on the little hall table. It had to weigh at least 20 pounds. She heaved it up and took 3 tentative steps for the kitchen door. Suddenly, the door burst open. Hannah jumped back. A woman stumbled through the entranceway. Her tasteful, gray pleated skirt was up around her waist. Hannah held up the paperweight, about to throw it. Then she realized it was her mom. Ms. Marin bumped into the telephone table as if she were wasted. Some guy was behind her, trying to unzip her skirt and kiss her at the same time. Hannah's eyes widened. Darren Wilden. Mr. April. So that was what her mom meant by taking care of it? Hannah's stomach clenched. No doubt she looked a little insane, tenaciously clutching the paperweight. Ms. Marin gave Hannah a very long look, not even bothering to turn away from Wilden. Her mother's eyes said, "I'm doing this for you." 34. Fancy meeting you here. On Monday morning, instead of sitting in first period bio, Emily stood next to her parents in the high-ceilinged, marble-floored nave of Rosewood Abbey. She tugged uncomfortably at the black, pleated, too-short gap skirt she'd found in the back of her closet and tried to smile. Mrs. De Laurentiis stood in the doorway, clad in a cowl-neck black dress, heels, and tiny freshwater pearls. She walked up to Emily and engulfed her in a hug. "Oh, Emily," Mrs. De Laurentiis sobbed. "I'm so sorry," Emily whispered back, her own eyes watering. Mrs. De Laurentiis still wore the same perfume, Coco Chanel. It instantly brought back all kinds of memories. A million rides to and from the mall in Mrs. De Laurentiis's Infinity, sneaking into her bathroom to steal trim spa tablets and to experiment with her expensive La Prairie makeup, going through her enormous walk-in closet and trying on all her sexy size 2 black Dior cocktail dresses. Other kids from Rosewood streamed around them, trying to find seats in the high-backed wooden pews. Emily hadn't known what to expect at Allison's memorial service. The Abbey smelled like incense and wood. Simple, cylinder-shaped lamps hung from the ceiling, and the altar was covered with a billion white tulips. Tulips were Allison's favorite flower. Emily remembered Allie helped her mom plant rows of them in their front yard every year. Allison's mom finally stood back and wiped her eyes. "I want you to sit up in the front, with all of Allie's friends. Is that okay, Kathleen?" Emily's mom nodded. "Of course." Emily listened to every click of Mrs. De Laurentiis's heels and the shuffling of her own chunky loafers as they walked down the aisle. Suddenly it hit Emily why she was here again. Allie was dead. Emily clutched Mrs. De Laurentiis's arm. "Oh my God." Her field of vision narrowed, and she heard a wah noise in her ears, the sign that she was about to faint. Mrs. De Laurentiis held her upright. "It's okay. Come on. Sit down here." Dizzily, Emily slid into the pew. "Put your head between your legs," she heard a familiar voice say. Then another familiar voice snorted.
Say it louder, so all the boys can hear.
Emily looked up. Next to her were Aria and Hannah. Aria wore a blue, purple, and fuchsia striped cotton boatneck dress, a navy velvet jacket, and cowboy boots. It was so Aria. She was the type who thought wearing some color to funerals celebrated the living. Hannah, on the other hand, wore a skimpy black V-neck dress and black stockings.
Dear, can you move over?
Above her, Mrs. De Laurentiis stood with Spencer Hastings, who wore a charcoal suit and ballet flats.
Hey, guys, Spencer said to all of them, in that buttery voice Emily had missed.
She sat down next to Emily.
So, we meet again, Aria said, smiling.
Silence. Emily peeked at all of them out of the corner of her eye. Aria was fidgeting with a silver ring on her thumb, Hannah was fumbling around in her purse, and Spencer was sitting very still, staring at the altar.
Poor Allie, Spencer murmured.
The girl sat quietly for a few minutes. Emily racked her brain for something to say. Her ears filled with the wah sound again. She twisted around to scan the crowd for Maya, and her eyes landed square on Ben's. He was sitting in the second-to-last row with the rest of the swimmers. Emily lifted her hand in a tiny wave. Next to this, the party stuff seemed petty. But instead of waving back, Ben glared at her, his thin mouth in a stubborn, straight line. Then he looked away.
Okay.
Emily swung back around. Rage filled her body. My old best friend was just found murdered, she wanted to scream. And we're in a church, for God's sake. What about forgiveness? Then it hit her. She didn't want him to take her back. Not one bit. Aria tapped her on the leg.
You okay after Saturday morning? I mean, you didn't even know yet, right?
No, it was something else, but I'm okay, Emily answered, even though that wasn't true.
Spencer, Hannah's head popped up. I saw you at the mall recently.
Spencer looked at Hannah.
Huh?
You were going into Kate Spade.
Hannah looked down.
I don't know. I was going to say hi. But, I'm glad you don't have to order those purses from New York anymore.
She put her head down and blushed, as if she'd said too much. Emily was startled. She hadn't seen Hannah make that expression in years. Spencer's brow crinkled. Then, a sad, tender look came over her face. She swallowed hard and looked down.
Thanks, she murmured.
Her shoulders started to shake, and she squeezed her eyes shut. Emily felt her own throat choking up. She'd never actually seen Spencer cry. Aria put her hand on Spencer's shoulder.
It's okay, she said.
Sorry, Spencer said, wiping her eyes with her sleeve. She glanced around at all of them and then started crying even harder. Emily hugged her. It felt a little awkward, but by the way Spencer squeezed her hand, Emily could tell she appreciated it. When they sat back, Hannah pulled a tiny silver flask out of her bag and reached over Emily to pass it to Spencer.
Here, she whispered.
Without even smelling it or asking what it was, Spencer took a huge swallow. She winced but said, thanks. She passed the flask back to Hannah, who drank and handed it to Emily. Emily took a sip, which burned in her chest, then passed it to Aria. Before drinking, Aria pulled on Spencer's sleeve.
This'll make you feel better too.
Aria tugged down on the shoulder of her dress to reveal a white knitted bra strap. Emily immediately recognized it. Aria had knitted heavy woolen bras for all the girls in 7th grade.
I wore it for old time's sake, Aria whispered. It's itching like hell.
Spencer sputtered out a laugh.
Oh my god.
You're such a spaz, Hannah added, grinning. I could never wear mine, remember? Emily chimed in. My mom thought it was too sexy for school.
Yeah, Spencer giggled. If you can call scratching your boobs all day sexy.
the girl snickered. Suddenly, Arya's cell phone buzzed. She reached into her bag and looked at the phone screen.
What?
Arya looked up, realizing they were all staring at her. Hannah fiddled with her charm bracelet.
Did you, just get a text message?
Yeah. So?
Who was it?
It was my mom, Arya answered slowly.
Why?
Low pipe organ music began to lilt through the church. Behind them, more kids shuffled in quietly. Spencer glanced nervously at Emily. Emily's heart started to pound.
Never mind, Hannah said. That was nosy.
Arya licked her lips. Wait, seriously, why? Hannah's Adam's apple rose with a nervous swallow.
I just thought maybe strange things had been happening to you too.
Arya's mouth fell open. Strange is an understatement. Emily clutched her arms around herself.
Wait, you guys too?
Spencer whispered. Hannah nodded.
Texts?
Emails, Spencer said.
About stuff from Seventh?
Arya whispered.
Are you guys serious?
Emily squeaked. The friends stared at each other, but before anyone could say anything else, the somber-sounding pipe organ filled the room. Emily turned around. A bunch of people were walking slowly up the center aisle. It was Allie's mom and dad, her brother, her grandparents, and some others who must have been relatives. Two red-headed boys were the last to come down the aisle. Emily recognized them as Sam and Russell, Allie's cousins. They used to visit Allie's family every summer. Emily hadn't seen them in years, and wondered if they were still as gullible as they used to be. The family members slid into the front row and waited for the music to stop. As Emily stared at them, she noticed movement. One of the pimply, red-headed cousins was staring at them. Emily was pretty sure it was the one named Sam. He'd been the geekier of the two. He stared at all the girls and then slowly and flirtatiously raised an eyebrow. Emily quickly looked away. She felt Hannah jab her in the ribs.
Not it, Hannah whispered to the girls.
Emily looked at her, puzzled, but then Hannah motioned with her eyes to the two gangly cousins. All the girls caught on at the same time.
Not it,
Emily, Spencer, and Arya said at once. They all giggled, but then Emily paused, considering what not it really meant. She'd never thought about it before, but it was kind of mean. When she looked around, she noticed her friends had stopped laughing too. They all exchanged a look.
I guess it was funnier back then, Hannah said quietly.
Emily sat back. Maybe Allie didn't know everything. Yes, this might have been the worst day of her life, and she was horribly devastated about Allie, and completely freaked about A. But for a moment, she felt okay. Sitting here with her old friends seemed like the tiny beginning of something. 35. Just you wait. The organ started up again with its dreary music, and Allie's brother and the others filed out of the church. Spencer, tipsy from a few slugs of whiskey, noticed that her three old friends had stood up and were filing out of the pew, and she figured she should go too. Everyone from Rosewood Day hung out at the back of the church, from the lacrosse boys to the video game-obsessed geeks who Allie no doubt would have teased back in Seventh. Old Mr. Yu, the one in charge of the Rosewood Day charity drive, stood in the corner, talking quietly to Mr. Kaplan, who taught art. Even Allie's older JV field hockey friends had returned from their respective colleges. They stood in a teary huddle near the door. Spencer scanned the familiar faces, remembering all the people she used to know and didn't anymore. And then she saw a dog, a seeing-eye dog.
Oh my God.
Spencer grabbed Arya's arm.
By the exit, she hissed.
Arya squinted.
Is that... Jenna,
Hannah murmured. And Toby, Spencer added. Emily turned pale.
What are they doing here?
Spencer was too stunned to answer. They looked the same, but totally different. His hair was long now, and she was gorgeous, with long black hair and wearing big Gucci sunglasses. Toby, Jenna's brother, caught Spencer staring. A sour, disgusted look settled over his face. Spencer quickly jerked her eyes away.
I can't believe he showed up, she whispered, too quietly for the others to hear.
By the time the girls reached the heavy wooden doors that led to the church's crumbling stone steps, Toby and Jenna were gone. Spencer squinted in the sunlight of the brilliant, perfectly blue sky. It was one of those lovely early fall days with no humidity, where you were dying to skip school, lie in a field, and not think about your responsibilities. Why was it always on days like this that something horrible happened? Someone touched her shoulder and Spencer jumped. It was a blonde, burly cop. She motioned for Hannah, Aria, and Emily to go on without her.
Are you Spencer Hastings? He asked.
She nodded dumbly. The cop wrung his enormous hands together.
I'm very sorry for your loss, he said. You were good friends with Ms. De Laurentiis, right?
Thanks. Yeah, I was.
I'm going to need to talk with you.
The cop reached into his pocket.
Here's my card. We're reopening the case. Since you were friends, you might be able to help us. Is it okay if I come by in a couple of days?
Sure, Spencer stammered. Whatever I can do. Zombie-like, she caught up with her old friends, who'd gathered under a weeping willow.
What did he want? Aria asked.
They want to talk to me, too, Emily said quickly. It's not a big deal, though, is it?
I'm sure it's the same old stuff, Hannah said.
He couldn't be wondering about... Aria started. She looked nervously to the church's front door, where Toby, Jenna, and her dog had stood.
No, Emily said quickly. We couldn't get in trouble for that now, could we?
They all glanced at each other worriedly. Of course not, Hannah finally said. Spencer looked around at everyone talking quietly on the lawn. She felt sick after seeing Toby, and she hadn't seen Jenna since the accident. But it was a coincidence that the cop had spoken to her right after she'd seen them, right? Spencer quickly pulled out her emergency cigarettes and lit up. She needed something to do with her hands.
I'll tell everyone about the Jenna thing. You're just as guilty as I am.
But no one saw me. Spencer nervously exhaled and scanned the crowd. There wasn't any proof. End of story. Unless... This has been the worst week of my life, Aria said suddenly.
Mine too, Hannah nodded.
I guess we can look on the bright side, Emily said, her voice high-pitched and jittery. It can't get any worse than this. As they followed the procession out to the gravel parking lot, Spencer stopped. Her old friend stopped too. Spencer wanted to say something to them. Not about Allie, or A, or Jenna, or Toby, or the police, but instead, more than anything, she wanted to tell them that she'd missed them all these years. But before she could say it, Aria's phone rang.
Hang on, Aria muttered, rooting around in her bag for her phone. It's probably my mom again.
Then Spencer's sidekick vibrated, and rang, and chirped. It wasn't just her phone, but her friends' phones too. The sudden, high-pitched noises sounded even louder against the sober, silent funeral procession. The other mourners shot them dirty looks. Aria held hers up to silence it. Emily struggled to operate her Nokia. Spencer wrenched her phone out of her clutch's pocket. Hannah read her screen.
I have one new message.
I do too, Aria whispered. Same, Emily echoed. Spencer saw she did, too. Everyone hit read. A moment of stunned silence passed.
Oh my God, Aria whispered.
It's from...
Hannah squeaked.
Arya murmured, Do you think she means...
Spencer swallowed hard. In tandem, the girls read their texts out loud. Each said the exact same thing. I'm still here, bitches. And I know everything. A. This recording of Pretty Little Liars by Sarah Shepherd was produced and directed by Bob Dion and performed by Cassandra Morris. It was recorded, edited, mixed, and mastered by Dion Audio Services, Inc. We hope you've enjoyed this program from Harper Audio. For more information about the broad range of titles from Harper Audio, Harper Children's Audio, and Cadman, please visit our website at www.harperaudio.com. Thank you for listening.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.